He was a huge man by Japanese standards. Towering over most people, he didn't so much walk as he did loom. His shadow fell long over the hallway he stalked down, and the people he passed only dared glance after him before turning back to their own worlds. He detested the idea of impersonating anyone, but even he recognized the value of blending in. After all, he'd survived as long as he had based on his ability to remain undetected. The hit had gone wrong, terribly so. And the sudden appearance of a monk, of all things, meant that the plan had backfired in the worst way. Now he was left with the task of cleaning up the entire mess and ensuring that no one would be left alive who could link him to the attempt. That meant doing things he would have normally preferred to employ someone else to do. He frowned. Doing so would have meant another loose end, a liability he simply couldn't afford. He strode into the emergency department at the hospital and saw the relaxed group of patrol officers scattered all over the ward. When they saw him, they immediately snapped to attention, one of them going so far as to throw up a hasty salute.
Who is in charge here?
Shiraishi, sir.
Your men lounge about as though they had nothing to do. Get them looking sharp. I want to know all the latest information about what happened in that alley, and I want to know it right now. Shiraishi?
Yes, sir?
I'm waiting.
You there. Get the commander the latest reports. Can I get you something to drink, sir?
No.
Very well. I was not informed you would be coming down to oversee this operation.
And since when is headquarters required to inform you that I am taking a personal interest in a case? Or are you operating under the delusion that you are now in charge?
Oh, no, sir. I was merely commenting that I find it strange to see you here. Mostly, we never even see you at all.
And you should count yourself lucky you do not. I am sent out to correct errors, Shiraishi. And I do not like finding them in the work of supposedly competent police officers under my command.
Oh, no, sir.
Where are those reports?
Here, sir.
A monk?
Sir?
A monk was able to disarm and render unconscious 12 armed schoolgirls?
It certainly appears that way, sir.
What about surveillance?
Sir?
The video cameras, Shiraishi. Have you been able to pull anything from any of the local surveillance cameras?
We weren't aware there were any in the area, sir.
Of course this dolt did not know about the cameras. Most of Japanese society didn't know about them. But the government had secretly and very quietly put an extensive network of video cameras throughout Japan's major cities. The cameras were linked to huge computer banks that constantly ran facial recognition software, comparing the thousands of faces that passed by them daily with the faces of known radicals and terrorists.
The internet cafe didn't have video cameras. All that computer equipment, and they're not the least bit concerned about getting robbed?
I'm not sure, sir.
Well, maybe it would be worth the time to send an officer down there to see if maybe he does have any cameras. And if so, could he potentially have a glimpse of our mysterious monk lurking through a frame or two?
Ah, certainly.
And what about composite sketch?
Sir?
Of the monk, Shiraishi. If you've got the witnesses this report claims, then maybe they could get together and come up with some sort of rendition we might be able to use to track this character down. I wouldn't think it would be too difficult to spot a robed, staff-carrying monk wandering around the city, would you?
No, sir.
Get it done!
Right away, sir!
What are we doing about the Japanese man and the American woman?
We have officers out looking for them, sir, but they seem to have disappeared.
Well, who can blame them? If I'd just been targeted by a dozen schoolgirls, I'd make myself scarce, too.
I'd expect so, sir.
Go and find them. If they're out there, they're most likely hiding and possibly scared. Try to imagine how you'd feel if you'd had a bunch of giggling adolescents trying to kill you.
Yes, sir.
Now, I see 5 conscious schoolgirls here and 6 who are still unconscious. Where is the 12th girl?
Sir?
12 girls! There are 11 here right now. That means one is missing unless I somehow manage to get through school without learning basic math.
Yes, sir. One is gone, sir.
And where is she, Shiraishi?
Radiology, sir. They wanted to take an X-ray of her skull to make sure she didn't have any lasting damage.
Lasting damage, indeed.
Sir?
Find the two victims. I'll return to check on your progress.
If he was in their position, it's exactly how he would have chosen to do it. Isolate and extract the information. It was risky, of course. But then again, these people didn't strike him as being scared of such risks. He knew that soon enough, the other girls would silently make their way out of the hospital and dissolve back into their regular boring teen lives. But this 12th girl concerned him. Alone and isolated from the rest of her friends, she would no doubt crack under interrogation. And while he'd been as careful as he normally was about his identity and what he was involved in, there were a few choice tidbits of information she might know that could put them on the right track. He needed to make sure the girl didn't talk. He banked left at the elevators and kept striding down the hall. The look on his face must have convinced everyone he passed that talking to him simply wasn't a good idea. He didn't care about being remembered. The latex makeup on his face would come off easily enough with hot water and soap. He could vanish within seconds just by using the restroom. But the girl knew his true identity, and that was dangerous. Maybe he'd gone too far in recruiting 12 of them. But he didn't want to underestimate Ogawa and Anya Creed. With Ogawa's deadly skills as a ninja and Creed's skills as a resourceful and wily warrior, using less than a dozen could have been disastrous. He saw the radiology department doors ahead. He frowned. The windows were tinted. He wouldn't be able to see where anybody was inside until he entered, loudly and obviously. He backtracked until he found a side door. It was locked, but he removed an electric pick from his pocket and slid it into the lock. He knew how hospitals were laid out, and he knew they always had multiple entrances and exits to every department in case of an emergency. He hoped they hadn't taken notice of other doors leading into their area. It was the only chance he had to catch them off guard. The corridor ran 50 feet, and then at the end he saw a small unmarked door. Looking up at the ceiling, he guessed that this had to be the back door. He tried the door and found it locked, so he used the electric pick again. This time, he gently pulled the door back, praying that the hinges wouldn't squeak and alert his prey inside. The door opened without a sound. He glanced around one final time, but found the area deserted. Smiling, he withdrew his pistol, and from his left pocket, he produced a suppressor, which he screwed on to the threaded barrel. He entered the radiology department.
I see. And who was it who sent you?
I cannot tell. Please, do not make me tell.
Oh, that is a shame.
He nosed around the corner and took a quick glimpse. The schoolgirl faced him in a chair. Her eyes were closed, and she was bound hand and foot to the chair. Tears streamed down her face. The man whose voice he had heard crouched close by. His back was to the back door, as was the lithe form of the woman standing nearby. Both of them were dressed in hospital staff clothes. He was glad he'd opted for the police uniform. The woman stepped forward. The schoolgirl saw the scalpel, and her eyes grew large. The girl's head snapped back, a black hole punching its way into her skull. In that instant, the woman pivoted and flung something at him. He jerked back as the thin black throwing spike embedded itself in the wall. He ran to the rear door. Racing down the hall, he thought about how unfortunate it was to have to kill someone so young. All of the schoolgirls were 18 years old, so legally they were adults. But it did little to make him feel good about what he'd just done. It was a necessary evil and nothing more. At the end of the corridor, he banked left, then right, and then through the doors. In an instant, he was gone. Nezuma regarded the schoolgirl's corpse and then looked at Shuko.
Did you see who it was?
No, but he was huge, too big to have been a Japanese, even though he looked like one.
You think he wore makeup?
Along with the police uniform, yes. It would be a good way to get in here and not have to answer any questions.
I wish we thought of that. It is time for us to go.
Nezuma stood and stripped off the white coat, and Shuko did the same. They exited through the front of the radiology department and kept walking as naturally as possible. They passed a nurse wheeling a patient toward radiology.
Faster, Shuko. We will split up at the garage. We'll rendezvous at the train station.
From the shadowed depths of the delivery van, he watched the man and woman split up. He marveled at how they both seemed to be in perfect rhythm with each other. The woman simply changed direction, and it was as if they had no knowledge of each other. He frowned. He knew the woman could certainly throw shuriken with unerring accuracy. It was only thanks to his lightning-fast reflexes that he hadn't caught the sharpened spike in his skull, or worse, his eye. The man he knew well enough. He was a trained killer, even if he did his best to obscure that fact every time he entered a tournament. He figured the woman then must be one of his employees, or lovers. He was well aware of how a teacher-student relationship could turn into something more. But somehow he couldn't see the stocky Nezuma letting himself fall into such a situation. But stranger things had happened. He raised the telephoto lens camera as the woman made her way across the parking lot. Twice, she seemed to look up and around, and he thought she might have sensed him. He'd leaned back deeper into the shadows. She glided up to the 4-foot fence and climbed over it with such ease that he almost jumped in surprise. It was only when she stopped at a payphone to make a call that he turned his attention back to Nezuma.